जय ओम विष्णु भाम हम प्रकचाद अस्तो तरसी सिमार हिज डिवाइन ग्रेस इस कान फाउंड द चार एसी भक्ति वीरांत स्वामी श्री भूपाल की जय ओम विष्णु भाम हम प्रकचाद सी सिमार हिज डिवाइन ग्रेस श्री भक्ति सिद्धांत सरस्वती रिको महाराज की श्री नाम चाद हरिदास को की प्रेम से हो श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद सुद्वैत गृहा शिवासी गो भक्त बिंद की श्री श्री राधा कृष्ण साई मुंद्र कुंड गिरी गोदान की वृंदावन धाम की मतोय धाम की नाबुदीप धाम की जुनून माई की गंगा माई की तुलसी देवी की भक्ति देवी की समवेद भक्त बिंद की all glories of the assembly of devotees. All glories of the assembly of devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Sri Guranga. So we are fortunate today that Hridayananda Maharaj is in the area. Maybe he'll come and join us at a short time. He's doing a program at State College. And my godbrother Seisha, please, one of these is for you up here. No. I'm going to need you to help me do the class, so you have to come. No, please. At least I need you to read something for me. I have very limited breath, limited strength, and I need some extra help here. Need some help from my friends. I apologize. I should have Seisha to give the class, but we're trying to maintain our contract with our TV people, and I'm supposed to speak once a week, and so we're using this also as an opportunity to for our television shows. And then I'm trying to see if I can. I got about four or five more prayers we haven't read from the Die Before Die Beggar book, and let's see if I can still be here to finish them. So we will apologize for giving the class, but what I think we can do is that I'll give a rather short class, and then maybe Seisha and Hridayananda Maharaj, if they're here, they can help me particularly with the questions and the answers. So Seisha, after I speak about 5 or 10 minutes, I want you to be able to read this excerpt here, not the stuff that's in pencil, but just what's typed, and there's a short part on the back also. Today I'm going to address the topic that we've addressed in all of these discussions about how we're all just moments away from death. This is actually from the Meditation 13 of our Die Before Die book. And the beggar that we're going to share, the reflection, is we will all very soon have a special appointment with death. We will all very soon have a very special appointment with death. This has been an awesome week, the last couple of weeks. It's been almost like the Hare Krishna who's who in terms of personalities who've come. Just some short time back, Satsu Maharaj gracefully came to visit with me. And then just a couple of days ago, Kirtananda and Bhagavan, and Dhanadas Swami, and Ranjan Swami, and we can go on and on. And tomorrow, Bhakti Chumaraj will be coming. A couple of days later, Radhanath Swami. So somehow they are being so kind to give me their blessings, and we're sharing all kinds of interesting things. I've tried to, you know, I have just closets and closets of gifts. So every time someone comes down, I try to download a gift on them as a way they have to think about me once they leave. And also, I pray every time, especially these great senior devotees come, I pray to Krishna and to Prabhupada that somehow they will allow me to say something or share something that will, in its own way, help to encourage them in their devotional life and the great work that they have to do here on the planet, in this universe, the mission of Srila Prabhupada. My time is very limited. within a few more days, a few more weeks, or maybe even up to some months. But basically, my time is over in this body. I sent out a communication just yesterday to try to get more clarity to that. And especially amongst my disciples, I told them so, and to my family, biological family, that John Favors, Bhaktivedanta Swami, and the TV audience know me as Swami Krishnapad, that person is gone now. And so you should see the time that we have left is just some special time that Krishna has given us all for closure. And basically, I will be dying on the battlefield. One of the reasons I'm late, I was just doing a interview for a newspaper in Philadelphia. And day before, we did a recording for the Oprah Winfrey Show. And then the day before that, I did a call-in hour radio show for the Washington, Maryland area. And why should we still be trying to do all of this stuff at this point? Is that this is what we have lived and how we lived, and this is also how we die. So the devotees, as you saw, they brought me up here, they propped me up and put a coat and hat on me and a dhoti, and I'm here now. And later they'll put me out in the wheelchair and carry me back there and prop me in the bed, and I'll be there. And Haribo, life goes on and death goes on. So we've talked in many ways about the idea of transcending the body, and we've reflected in many ways on suffering. It's like I don't want to talk too long because some of you may be suffering from the sun here. We've looked, you know, particularly at how Vishwanath Chakravarti discusses in the Madhurya Kandambini about aparabdha, prarabdha, kuta, and bijam. Is that klesha or sinful problems and issues and anxieties and etc. manifest in various ways. And so some of our suffering is due to things that we've done in previous lives that's caught up with us. Some of the suffering is things that we've done perhaps unhealthily, and they're around the corner, aparabdha, and we'll receive some complexities due to what is there that will manifest and unfold. And there are certain kinds of things that come our way that are seeds in the seed form. Just like here we have this project of 300-400 acres of land. And a few devotees have their own gardens, and we have the community farm, the community garden. And from time to time, we're constantly trying to do what we're trying to plant something. And so the ground has to be cultivated. So there's also the stage before you plant. And that's the kuta. And then there's the bija, the seed. So just as there's the bhakti lata bija, there is the karma beach, there's the jnana beach, there are so many other kinds of bijas that grow and get nourished and are unhealthy. Well, we want to constantly to cultivate the bhakti lata bija so that our creepers will grow and they will flourish. So as we look at how to understand happiness and to be not overly overwhelmed by it, but how to understand difficulties and sufferings, and also how to process it and to deal with it. So today I want to start off by discussing something offered to us by Jiva Goswami and by Vishwanath Chakravarti. Jiva Goswami says in the Sandarbha, he brings forth interesting reflection. He says, actually, Krishna cannot have full compassion on the living entities because Krishna does not suffer like living entities. And so, in order to fully understand and help someone, one would normally think that there must be also not only sympathizing, but empathy, where one has been there, understands that. And so he brings up that actually Krishna does not experience suffering in such way. So Krishna leaves this or relegates such to his pure devotees who do undergo such intense suffering and who then can share that level of compassion. In other words, he's presenting that there are certain things that Krishna does through particularly his devotees, that he empowers them, he arranges, just like in Avirbhav or Avesha, how Krishna appears and manifests himself, and sometimes some of that manifestation is how a part of him enters into the body, or it influences another to do the work that he wants to have done. Now, Vishwanath Chakravarti, he brings something that we can say adds to that and maybe brings more clarification. We may sometimes be somewhat bewildered. How did these great acharyas share different views on different things? And they're all from the spiritual world and pure. Well, that is part of their purity, that they're from the spiritual world and they're pure, they're nitya siddhas, and they come into this world. They have different commissions, different ambassadorships. Their Nara Leela expresses itself in various ways. But also, a lot of what they share has to do with some of their own flavors of how they serve Krishna, how they know him, and how they extend themselves to share him. So Vishwanath Chakravarti, he says, when we pray to Krishna, and we're praying, of course, there are different ways. We know karma kandic prayer, where someone is praying for some material benefit, someone is praying to God for a raise, for a house. And we can understand as transcendentalists, those prayers don't actually reach the Supreme because there's so many other agents who deal with those kind of prayers that mainly has to deal with material aggrandizement, assessments, achievements. But now, what about the prayer where someone is praying praying to be a better servant, or someone is praying to become freed of sense gratification, or freed of different enemies of the mind? What about the prayers where someone is praying to God, to the Godhead, and praying for empowerment? So Vishwanath Chakravarti, he says, well, you know, Krishna in Vrindavan, he does not see himself as the Supreme God. So now how do we deal with the entities who are praying to Krishna in the mood of the Supreme Godhead who can arrange all of these things? And so he shares that actually Krishna is Sarvajnan. He's all-knowing. And we know he has all of these mystic Yogeshwar Chintana potencies. He's the supreme mystic. So, and he explains that it's not that Krishna is pretending when he is allowing himself to interact with his loving associates in the mood of Vatsalya or parental, in the mood of Sakya friendship, in the mood of Madhurya conjugal. It's that he is really in that mood. He's allowed himself to fully become absorbed in that spirit. And so it's not just pretension. He is really in that mood. It's not that when Mother Yasoda is interacting with him, he's thinking all the time that really I'm God anyway. So, you know, who are you? You know, you know, Mataji, you know. But he is accepting that she is his mother and Nanda Maharaj, etc., is his father. And therefore the ras becomes sweeter. Or when he's interacting with the gopas or the gopis, it's not that he is always or most of the time or hardly ever in the mood of being the Aishwarya, the supreme controller. No. He's in the mood of how he is giving his love at that time. So then that Krishna, who we're praying to, how is he going to accept our prayers if he's not accepting that he's the God who arranges everything and does everything? And so Vishwanath Chakravarti explains that Krishna is Sarvajnan, and he is simultaneously having an aspect of him that is able to handle all of that while he is still engaged in the amorous pastimes or the friendship pastimes, etc. So in this way, we see that yes, Krishna does know all of our sufferings, difficulties as well as achievements. And it's not only because he's in the heart, but it's also part of how he knows, because he knows everything, and how he arranges to know certain things and to make certain things happen through his devotees. And this is why we say, what mad bhakya punya adhika, that it is better to serve the devotees of the Lord than to serve Krishna. Or chadiya vaishnava sevaya nistava payacha keba, is that without getting the shelter of the feet of the servants of the Lord, no one can make sufficient types of advancement. Or Sri Vaishnava Kripa Prathane, is that one is begging for the merciful glance and blessings of the sadhus. So it is Krishna who allows or arranges himself to be most appreciated by coming to his devotees, associate to the association of the Vaishnavas. Now, before I read the beggar prayer today, I want Sesha to read this excerpt from the Bhagavatam that addresses the issue of suffering. Because sometimes we wonder, why does God himself seem to even make his servants suffer seemingly more than anyone else? If you look at Jesus, Muhammad, Buddha, Baha'u'llah, Ramanujacharya, Madhvacharya, you go on and on and on, and you see that some of the kind of difficulties that were subjected to them in their lifetime seem far beyond anything that any normal person would ever be willing to deal with or would be imposed upon them. Or we see in so many cases, like in the story, pastime of Rukmini, how Krishna tells her at some point that really, I never really loved you, and I only married you because, you know, your brothers and your king, your folks, you know, they were my enemies. I wanted to get at them. And after all, how can you love me? I'm like this and like that and like that. I mean, imagine, you know, a young girl is captivatedly in love, and then one day the husband says, hey, you know, David, you know, I really don't love you. I mean, I just hated your father so much. You know, we used to work together. I used to work in his company, and he was such a tyrant, and I hated him so much. And I thought the best way to get back at him is that I marry his daughter and I give her hell. Huh? It would be devastated. Rukmini fainted. She was devastated. So why does Krishna do these kind of things? But it's understood that there are times he does various unusual things that really are ways that he brings more love out of his devotees so that he can give them more love. Ways that he stimulates the creeper so that it nourishes, it becomes more nourished after all that drama is over, and then there is even no longer the vipalamba seva, or the service and reflection sometimes in absence, but the sambhoga, or where there is, you know, there is a union and association. So Vasakya is going to read something that gives us a little more insight about how the devotee may suffer, that Krishna may arrange such for, on such a devotee. Can we read this, Sesh?
Thank you for the opportunity to extend some service to you. The beloved devotees of the Lord do not regard as very troublesome the suffering he imposes on them.
Now try to listen very closely to what he's saying.
Indeed, they find that in the end it gives rise to unlimited pleasure. Just as a stinging ointment applied by a physician cures his patient's infected eye. In addition, suffering helps protect the confidentiality of devotional service by discouraging intrusions by the faithless. And it also increases the eagerness with which the devotees call upon the Lord to appear. If the devotees of Lord Vishnu were complacently happy all the time, he would never have a reason to appear in this world as Krishna, Ramchandra, Narsingha, and so on. And without the Lord's showing himself on earth in his original form of Krishna and in the form of various incarnations, his faithful servants in this world would have no opportunity to enjoy his Rasa Leela and other pastimes. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti here counters a possible objection. What fault would there be in God's incarnating for
such... Maharaj, please. We're just waiting for your darshan. Please come join us. We're just hanging out here under the tree, trying to get some suntans. Maharaj, we're just talking a little bit about an angle that Srila Jiva Goswami in the Sandhava Maharaj offers. Just update you. I just finished talking a little bit about Srila Jiva Goswami discussing how that Krishna, in one sense, cannot offer full compassion to a living entity because Krishna doesn't suffer. And that it is a suffering that is done by the devotees of Krishna, that where Krishna empowers them to be able to facilitate and eradicate, and as they are having that experience, they understand it. But then I was showing how Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti adds to that, and also showing how some of the acharyas share different points on different things sometimes that may seem to be contradictory, but when we look at it closer, it adds more to a greater understanding. And how Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti says how Krishna is Savya Gyan, but how is it that when we pray, and we're praying to Krishna as the Aishvara or the Supreme Godhead, Supreme Controller, but Krishna is in Vrindavan. And in his Vrindavan mood, he is not himself thinking he's God. He's not dealing with the submissions in that spirit. But Vishwanath Chakravarti says, yes, that although Krishna never leaves Vrindavan, and the ultimate Krishna is in that mood, that he is able to simultaneously to maintain that mood. One aspect of him is able to help and honor the prayers of those who are praying to him as devotees, but it's praying to him in the mood of being the Godhead as such. And then we're looking now at just discussing real brief about why sometimes suffering is there. And Seksha is reading a passage from Bhagavatam discussing how why some areas Krishna makes one suffer as a way that he comes and relieves that suffering, as a way that he enhances the separation, so that when there is the association and togetherness and the sambhoga, that becomes more sweeter, and that also it allows, in many ways, for his potencies to manifest, because as we become more desperate, we cry out more, we become more receptive, and we become sometimes more able to be candidates, you know, for mercy. So, Seshi, if you can finish reading that. And Maharaj, if you don't mind, just when he finished, there's a paragraph and a half from the Krishna book. After Seshi reads that, if you can read this for them. See, I'm dying. I'm still trying to be a controller. You know, I'm giving the class. And I'm still, my senior guy brothers, I'm getting them to serve me. Please forgive me. And they put me in this high thing out here because this is a permanent seat that the birds pass your stool on. You know, they put the guru in here. So they're just accepting guru's body now is finished. And he said it's finished. So he's transcendental to it. So somehow I'm sitting like this, but you all forgive me. Because we're doing this program as part of our TV series also. So, Seshi, have you finished reading that? And Maharaj, if you read everything that's in the print, but not what's marked in pencil.
Okay,
so Seshi will finish his first.
Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti here counters a possible objection. What fault would there be in God's incarnating for some other reason than to deliver saintly persons from suffering? The learned Acharya responds, yes, my dear brother, this makes good sense, but you are not expert in understanding spiritual moods. Please listen. It is at night that the sunrise becomes attractive, during the hot summer that the cold water gives comfort, and during the cold winter that warm water is pleasing. Lamplight appears attractive in darkness, not in the glaring light of day. And when one is distressed by hunger, food tastes especially good. In other words, to
you see, sometimes by contrast, you see something then becomes more appreciable.
In other words, to strengthen his devotee's mood of dependence on him and longing for him, the Lord arranges for his devotees to go through some suffering, and when he appears in order to deliver them, their gratitude and transcendental pleasure are boundless.
So you reflect on that, and after I hear Nana Maharaj reads, and then I read the little meditation, then if you have questions, then you can pass the questions, and then my two wonderful God brothers can answer the questions. So, Maharaj, this is some, maybe you can share with them where it's from, what you're going to read.
32nd chapter, second last paragraph of Krishna.
You can give the microphone. We have a garland for Sri Nanda Maharaj?
Oh, that's... Yes, we're getting
one
today.
Okay.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Very glad that Krishna brought me here to be with all of you, and of course with my very dear godbrother, Bhakti Tirtha Swami, who has been tolerating me, but
have been highly enjoying your association the last couple of days.
We met in 1972 when I was 23 years old, and you were, I guess, a little younger.
A little younger.
1972 when I was 7 years old. And we traveled together, and I normally don't come so much to the East Coast, but somehow I happened to be in Virginia, so I understood that it was Krishna's arrangements. I had to come here, and I'm very, I'll read this in a second. I don't want you to think that I'm not going to do it, but
you see what I did? I gave him a paper so he would be relegated what he's going to say. You see? I mean, I'm really controlling, right? And still he finds a way to get around it. So he's more intelligent.
Everyone knows it's very dangerous to give an Iskcon guru a microphone. I'm trying to get back. So, anyway, I really, of course, first of all, Bhakti Tirtha Swami Association, it's been... not only, you know, to say a few words and all, I just have to say this because it's coming out. That is that, of course, like devotees all around the world, I've also been following this, all these activities, all these events, and uh-oh, now he's in his motor chair. Put on a sheriff's hat. Oh, I'll read it. So it's had a very powerful, dramatic impact on my life, as I'm sure on your life, in your lives. And hey, there you go, my old friend from Atlanta. So now coming here today, or in the last few days, it's been a very powerful spiritual experience. And so, and being here with all of you, it's been I've learned a lot, and I'm continuing to learn, and it's something which will continue to be important to me, I'm sure, for the rest of my life. So, now I'll read this. This is Krishna returns to the gopis, and then I'll just... That was a warning not to read the part that Michael was going to. So I'll read this, and I just wanted to just say a few words on what Bhakti Tirtha Swami had said. So, my dear friends, Krishna continued, you might be aggrieved by my words and acts, but you must know that sometimes I do not reciprocate with my devotees' dealings with me. My devotees are very much attached to me, but sometimes I do not reciprocate their feelings properly in order to increase their love for me more and more. If I can very easily be approached by them, they might think Krishna is so easily available, so sometimes I do not respond. If a person has no money, but after some time accumulates some wealth and then loses it, he will think of the lost property 24 hours a day. Similarly, in order to increase the love of my devotees, sometimes I appear to be lost to them. And instead of forgetting me, They feel their loving sentiments for me increase. My dear friends, do not think for a moment that I have been dealing with you as I do with ordinary devotees. I know what you are. You have forsaken all kinds of social and religious obligations. You have given up all connection with your parents. Without caring for social convention and religious obligations, you have come to me and loved me, and I am so much obliged to you that I cannot treat you as ordinary devotees. Do not think that I was away from you. I was near to you. I was simply seeing how much you were anxious for me in my absence. So please do not try to find fault with me. Because you consider me so dear to you, kindly excuse me if I have done anything wrong. I cannot repay your continuous love for me, even throughout the lifetimes of the demigods and the heavenly planets. It is impossible to repay you or show enough gratitude for your love. Therefore, please be satisfied by your own pious activities.
Maybe you can move this bill.
You have displayed exemplary attraction for me, overcoming the greatest difficulties arising from family connections. Please be satisfied with your highly exemplary character, for it is not possible for me to repay my debt to you. So if I could just be permitted a few words on this, I promise I'll end by sundown. Actually, you can always pull the microphone for it. I appreciated, of course, what Bhaktivinoda Swami just said and what Shesha Prabhu, my dear god brother Shesha Prabhu, just read, and I appreciate what I just read. Not my style of reading, but what Krishna said. And so, in my own life, in my own personal, internal, spiritual life, one of the most important facts which sustains me is the fact, and I'm convinced of this, that ultimately in Krishna's creation, in dealing with Krishna, there is perfect justice. There's perfect justice, and not simply in the dry sense of quid pro quo, like, you know, they cost a dollar each, you give $2, you get 2 units. Not just in a dry sense, but there's justice and more than justice. In the sense that Krishna... that's one point. I just want to put out a few points and then relate it to what Bhaktivinoda Swami said. So there's absolute perfect justice and more than perfect justice, which is the concept of causeless mercy. And then another point is that basically for those of us who are conscious beings, including Krishna, who is the supreme conscious being, the source of all the others, there are ultimately only two movements of the soul, or two kinds of activity: mental, emotional, intellectual, physical. And those two activities are giving and taking. And it is the nature of the pure soul to give, and it is the nature of the corrupted soul to take. Taking, by the way, should not be confused with receiving. Because the kingdom of God is the ultimate chain letter, in the sense that, you know, like if you send a dollar to all the names on this list, you'll get $1 million in 5 weeks or something. So the idea is that in spiritual life, everyone is giving to everyone else, and everyone is receiving from everyone else. So everyone is receiving everything, and no one is taking anything. And this is the perfect social state. And by social, I don't mean a mundane society, but just the perfect state of living beings living together and having relationships with each other. And so Krishna, as the supreme pure, which Arjuna calls him in the Gita, pavitram, parangdhama, parang brahma, parangdhava, dhamma, pavitram, paramang bhavan, you, Krishna, are the supreme pure and the supreme purifier. So therefore, as we hear this language where Krishna is acting with perfect graciousness and bestowing perfect grace upon the living beings, underneath this there is the powerful fact that Krishna never, by any act of word or deed, exploits any other living being. And that Krishna only gives and only acts for our benefit. So whatever Krishna does to us is the best possible thing that could have been done for us. And it's never possible that Krishna could have done something better for us but didn't do it for some eccentric or idiosyncratic reason. And so, in my own mind, I don't want to... I mean, there is a certain ecstasy in Krishna consciousness, which is ultimately our eternal state of mind, where we engage in Krishna's pastimes. There's these loving exchanges where Krishna takes the part of an innocent, of a simple cowherd boy, and his friends sometimes get the best of him in wrestling, and the gopis chastise him, and he, and Krishna expresses his own imperfection, his own inabilities to reciprocate, and so on. And so these ecstasies, these feelings, are ultimately the state of mind and the happiness of pure souls in relation to Krishna. But that purity is built upon, I would say, or is in no way negates the fact that ultimately Krishna is always doing perfectly what is best for every soul. And so we can't always understand it, but somehow or other, I mean, Bhaktivinoda Swami was saying, and I wanted to sort of just talk very briefly, and then I'll end before I'm ended, that
you're so hilarious.
I don't want this TV show to be terminated after the first episode. Very short run.
No problem. We have editors. They're going to edit this out anyway. It's okay.
That's better because I didn't have time to put on any makeup. So, Krishna here says the devotees are not ordinary souls, and in the case of Bhaktivinoda Swami, clearly he's not an ordinary devotee. There are lots of devotees in the world now, not enough, and clearly he's an extraordinary devotee.
Yeah, so who wears hats like this?
Well, that's what I meant. So, as we all know, and
you got a pretty flat hat on, also.
Play ball. More juggernaut.
I'm sorry.
So, I mean, that's anyway. So, there are many things I could say, but I'll just simply say that for now, and I'll save my ammunition, other ammunition, for later. But that, in the case of Bhaktivinoda Swami, I know it has been very difficult for me to accompany this whole process, and but we have to believe what Krishna is saying, and we have to believe what we know to be true about Krishna. That in the case of very distinguished devotees going through unusual difficulty or hardship that would be difficult for anyone, we have to understand that Krishna is acting perfectly to glorify his devotee and to bring his devotee to the highest stage of spiritual love. And it forces us, really, in order to, as Krishna says here, don't criticize me. But sometimes we'll just, Krishna says, yeah, please do not try to find fault with me. And so, ultimately, the buck stops with Krishna, or the rupee. And so, ultimately, it's Krishna. If we are dissatisfied with what Krishna, with what is happening, it's a type of dissatisfaction with Krishna. And so this devotional service is the art of all work, to feel the love we should feel for a great devotee of the Lord, to find it very painful to see him going through difficult circumstances, yet at the same time to remain very staunchly committed to the truth of Krishna, that Krishna is ultimately making a perfect arrangement, requires a very mature spiritual understanding. It requires even, I would say, just human maturity, maturity as a human being. Anyway, so I'll stop here for now, and
so what? So what I'm going to do, I'm going to read the short meditation. We will all very soon have a special appointment with death. And then I'm going to have to leave. I can only sit for so long. But I want everyone to stay at least another 15 or 20 minutes. And then Sesha and Hridayananda Maharaj can take questions from what we've discussed so far and from what I'll be reading. And the other points that you might be stimulated to ask to take advantage of their association. Sesha is one of the most ideal householders in our society, not just America, but in the world. Hridayananda Maharaj is just unusual. He's outrageous. He went to Harvard and broke all the records. He was outrageous. He has a PhD in Sanskrit studies, and he's one of the most amazing scholars in our movement. When he writes various things, everyone has to notice it. I was telling him the other day, he has an interesting kind of profile, because you won't see, some of you will just see hearing him now, as a few people would know, that he's a very humorous person, but at the same time, he's shrewd as hell. So he gets you laughing while he then interjects what he wants you to ponder upon and hopefully to be able to accept. And then because he's so scholarly, he has this amazing brain. He learns languages just like that in no time. And so therefore, and then if you have some disturbance of what he's saying, after he's got you laughing and has given it to you, you know, some immunization, and then if you have trouble with it, then he beats you over the head with Shastra. So he takes scripture, then he just... So one way or the other, you know, he gets his man, he knocks you out. And I'm happy that we're together. When I first came into ISKCON, I was able to travel with him and Satsuk Maharaj, and we traveled to universities all around. And we had quite an adventurous time as young men. So the reason I'm sharing this is, one, I got four more prayers to share before this book is finished. Die before dying. This is a very simple reflection. But as I've had several visitors in the last week and a half, one of the things that's become more and more dominant in my mind and perhaps in theirs is that we're all just moments away from death. We all have appointments. Even those of you who are so-called quite young, that we live for such a short time. And before we know it, that we're out of this body. And so as we see someone going through the death experience, it's not just something for us to observe, but more important is for us to also look at what it means to us personally and how we can organize our own priorities better, how we can be more mindful, how we can say the things and do the things that, you know, are most important now and not put them off. How we can try to live in such a way that when we do have to leave, we don't have a whole lot of stuff that we have to be in anxiety about or have compunction we weren't able to do. So this is in the mood of trying to help everyone to look a little closer at this rites of passage, this samskara that happens to 100% of people on the planet. I start off with a paragraph I shared once before. In the late October of 1977, Srila Prabhupada said, "Do things very carefully. I am already dead. But still, I am giving you instructions as far as I can." Through this statement, he was reminding us that he would soon be leaving. But he was also sending a reminder that we all are around the corner from death and must therefore do the necessary while we can. As we know, Lord Brahma lives for 311 trillion and 4 billion earth years. One day of the time, of the according to the demigods' time, is equal to 6 months of our time. Although Lord Brahma and the demigods live for a long time, in comparison to our situation, it's all relative. So whether we are on Pitaloka, or we're in the medium planets, or we're in the heavenly kingdoms, that there are, we know, places of misery. Abrahmana Bhuvana Loka. that there are places where constant samsara, repeated birth and death. And the life is relative. We have some species that live literally for just one a day, and they go to birth, procreation, and death. And we have higher beings that live for such longer, but in each case, the body is terminated at some point. They also live up to 100 of their years, but in every species, death is inevitable. Yudhisthira Maharaj, very famous, remember, explained that the most wonderful phenomena is how people see others around them dying, but still thinking that they themselves will never die. People are absorbed in mundane living as if they will forever remain in these present bodies. And even we as sadhus often get caught up somewhat similar. We have so many projects and so many things that we often procrastinate, or many things that are not our major priorities, and we know that we will encounter death, but there are times when we don't give the kind of energy that's necessary, accepting that at any moment there can be a shift. Just as we know every day somebody who was very wealthy goes bankrupt. Every day somebody who was seemingly healthy is finding that they have chronic disease. And every day somebody is dying who and surely didn't anticipate it. People are absorbed in such. No one is allowed to cancel or postpone their appointment with death when the scheduled time arrives. Neither can someone else sit in for us. We have to personally present ourselves. We all very soon have a special appointment with death. At the funeral home, the bodies of the deceased lie in caskets. Some seem to have a smile on their face. Maybe some of you have noticed that. If you know anybody who works in a funeral home, sometimes they can tell something about the quality of the person when the body comes in. Some bodies just have wretched expressions because, you know, Yamadutas are coming and they're straining and straining and they're frightened. In other cases, they have a very peaceful mood. Often it has to do with what is happening as the soul is being carried out of the body. Some jivas leave the body very peacefully with a glimpse of the beautiful, of the beauty they will encounter. The helpers who come for them are most divine, pleasant, and refreshing. Others are horrified as the Yamadutas, the superintendents of death, in charge of the sinful, come to snatch them out of their bodies. As they perceive their fate, they are petrified. Even though the morticians at the funeral parlor try to make each person's body appealing, it is obvious to all the mourners that the person has been called away to their special appointment. We all very soon will have a special appointment with death. And just think about that we all have a very specific, categorical time that is arranged for us that we're going to have to depart. A short visit to the graveyard is even more revealing. One will encounter different types of tombstones and monuments. The grass is often manicured. Flowers are lovely placed over many of the graves. Inscribed in each stone are the dates of birth and the date of death. Again, we are reminded that just as sure as one is born at a particular time, one will also depart at a designated day and time. Although some of the deceased were wealthy, beautiful, famous, etc., there is little to distinguish one body from another, because they're all placed 6 feet under the ground with dirt piled on top of them or cremated, etc. Some try to ignore, deny, and yes, even conquer over death. It's like in the case of Aranyakasipu and Ravana and Salva. But when the designated time arrived, each person was singled out. From millions of other perspectives, from millions of other prospective clients, we should all remember, we all soon have a special appointment with death. Like, I skipped a line. Some of the bodies in the funeral homes and graveyards, crematoriums, died very young. Others remain in their bodies for over 100 years. Some lived in solitude, and others had thousands of participants in their funeral ceremonies. However, the present differences are less than the similarities, because in each case, everyone who knew them has left them to be alone and has walked away from them, never to associate with their physical body again. Like so many letters I'm writing now, and I'm saying, So somebody says something to me, I say something to them, and I say, well, you know, we'll never most likely see each other again in the physical, but such and such and such. As Grandfather Bhishma explained on his deathbed, everyone will walk away from us at death, and everything will separate from us. Only Dharma or Adharma will follow us. The results of our virtuous or non-virtuous acts will follow. The deceased in the funeral home parlors or in the graves are proof that in the end, all associates always walk away from us in sadness, fear, and sometimes anger. We all very soon have a very special appointment with death. Now think about that. Whatever academic achievements we acquired, whatever financial things we're able to accumulate, whatever disciples, whatever friends, whatever it may be, whatever investments, stocks, bonds, whatever, is soon we're going to have to walk away from it. Or soon people are going to walk away from us. And then what we have, of course, is what we have, our consciousness. Some of the deceased died in accidents. Some succumbed to disease. Some were murdered. Some committed suicide. Others' deaths happen at birth. Whichever way death chooses to call, each person is selected out of billions to leave on a precise day and time under particular circumstances. This is how each person takes birth in a special way, how we all came to the movement. You think about how each of us came into Krishna consciousness. Krishna arranged a very special, particular arrangement, and he's also arranging a special way that we each will live, according to how we live. And in every case, not one person could hide, deny, or postpone their appointment. When death called each client, very few were eager to honor the call. Most had many things to do, to work on, to complete, to finalize. Very few were ready to accept full closure. Most felt that their existence in this body was very short and incomplete. For most of us, whenever we die, it's too early. Of course, they're right. Whether one dies at birth or lives for over 100 years, whether one has lived in solitude or been very social, whether one had been famous or infamous, whether one has been a mature success or failure, rich or poor, sick or healthy, a theist or an atheist, the similarities are that after a short time in the body, we must depart. Even if we consider demigod's time or the lifespan of Lord Brahma in connection with the eternal time associated with the soul, the time we're in these bodies is very short. No one will have to wait a long time before death specifically calls for them, for we all very soon have a special appointment with death. And then I'll read the concluding paragraph here. So listen to the conclusion. Death has looked in my direction and has pointed at me. Her mouth is opened. Soon I will see if she is calling my name. I am that lowly beggar who will be called forth now or very, very soon by death. I pray and beg that when the decision is finally made, and when I wrote this, decision wasn't finally made, but now it's made. And that's why I said I am on borrowed time, and the things are being arranged to make the transcendence. I will accept when the time finally is made. Will I accept and receive it with excitement and purity? Let us all get ourselves ready and help others get fully ready for their special appointment with death. The conclusion is that we all are just around the corner from leaving the body. And it doesn't matter whether we're living as long as devas or demigods or angels or archangels or vijaharas, apsaras, gandharas, etc., that our life in these physical bodies are very short. We have a special way how we came into this world. Out of billions of people who came into this universe only, we came in a very special way. Out of the billions in this universe, and what they say of the trillions and much more in other universes, that each person, things are being arranged according to our particular consciousness of how we go. So our death is really just an extension of our life. according to what is really going on in our consciousness, will determine what will jump out, manifest, radiate, vibrate at the time of death. Because death is that ultimate test. Just like when the student has been studying or not studying, and then when the test comes, the final examination, is at that moment or during that time, the student has a chance to show how much he or she has been vigorously understanding the lesson, and now they're excited because they have chance to offer back what they have learned and to show what they have internalized. The same student who has been cheating, deviating, who's been avoiding or getting by, when that Maha test comes, the student becomes so confused, experiences all kind of gloom and anxiety. What we have to look closer at, and I'll end with this, is what do we take shelter of when we do not get what we want? What do we take shelter of when things don't turn out the way that we like them to turn out? What do we take shelter of when Krishna himself sometimes seems to not to appear for us or seems to arrange suffering for us? That will say a lot about our consciousness and a lot about what we've aggregated that's going to be with us at the time of death. And then second, as we've shared many times, our devotional service has never been fully based upon what we do. Krishna cannot be bought, cannot be ingratiated or flattered. He's Atmaram, he does not need anything. So all the external things we do ultimately to bring about a certain internal construct. And if they're not bringing about a deep, sufficient internal construct, we're fooling and bewildering and cheating ourselves. So what really is being monitored is Krishna's looking at each of us at what we are holding back. And so where we are holding back is where we are not sufficiently surrendering. What we are giving and doing is a part of the process of surrendering. But Krishna knows, yes, you are bribing me because you are giving and doing so much, but still there is so much that you have that you are not giving or you are claiming proprietorship. So when Krishna puts his devotees sometimes in this akinchana where he takes away or he puts them in this, the pastime that Maharaj was reading, the gopis, of how he removes to enhance their appreciation when they do have, but he also removes because then their love shows even stronger. Our love constantly for the teacher shows stronger when the teacher is gone and not when the teacher is there. Our dedication shows more. We have every rational reason to curse God. When things are happening in our life from a rational perspective, we have every reason to say enough is enough, or to say now I'm going to worship Durga, Shiva, or whoever, but no more of this Krishna stuff. So when we have so many reasons to consider that God it perhaps is not supplying the way we want, when we want, how we want, but our faith, our shraddha is such that we're so much in love that we're all for the Lord, he's all for us, then is when the love really radiates, becomes vibrant, and the Lord is constantly wanting to glorify his devotees by allowing that loving exchange and experiences to come forth. So I'm going to go, but I'm just going to end, and then they'll take the questions. Is that, remember, we're all just literally moments away from death, and that when we see this happening to someone, we shouldn't just have a pity party, or we shouldn't just feel, oh, how unfortunate for that particular being, but we should understand that whatever happens in our life space, that somehow it's a lesson for us because it didn't have to come into our perception. And so everything that happens can either help us for advancing with our liberation, an ultimate save our service to the God, to Godhead, or can distract from that. Sarva bhuta hitai is that we want to have mercy and love for all living entities and want to be willing to make sacrifice. One of the highest expressions of love is that one is able to minimize their own egocentricity, individuality, their own personal desires and aspirations, and ready to subjugate that on behalf of their beloved. We're not talking about cult mentality of being docile and just blind faith. We're talking about having such strong faith and such strong commitment and such strong love that one enjoys the suffering or the inconvenience that one undergoes on behalf of their Lord. So today I end also with Bhakti Vinod's statement, is that any suffering that he undergoes on behalf of his service to Krishna is his greatest joy. And Bhaktisiddhanta's statement that one must be ready to shed millions of gallons of blood on behalf of trying to help the conditioned souls. So we have a duty to take on inconvenience, austerity. We have a duty that we're not masochists, or we're not sadists, but if we are just living in our own comfort zones, then this is moksha consciousness, and it's not going to give us the heart that's necessary for entering into Vraj. That this intense level of love and selflessness goes far beyond anything connected with this three-dimensional realm of existence. And we are able to imbibe that as we make ourselves more available as puppets of Krishna. Otherwise, the thing is becoming clear and clear to me is that whatever efforts we make is not really enough. But as we do certain kinds of efforts, it brings certain level of reciprocation. And so much mercy is there. And that was in the reading also that that Sesha was sharing with us. Why Krishna involves himself in such ways that seemingly causes or sanctions suffering. That all of this is done as expressions of love. So if some difficulty brings about greater realization, knowledge, affection, and ultimate results, then you ultimately see that as an interesting catalyst that helped to give you something very special. When you see your children growing up very nicely, and you think of all the difficulties you had in trying to raise them, you feel it was worth it. When you see your husband or your wife or one who is beloved to you, and you see how what you have done and the sacrifice that you've made and how they've benefited, you feel even that much more happy that you went the extra mile and went out of your way. So imagine when there is a competition like this, that the more we try to give ourselves to Krishna, the more we try to glorify him, the more we try to genuinely serve him, the more he then glorifies and serves us because he wins. And so this is the competition, not the material competition, but the competition of love we want to have every day in our relationships. We want to look constantly to see who can we help. We want to think very deeply about what we say and do and how it affects others. We want to be very mindful and valuing our own life to the degree that we've been able to give value to someone else. And then when we leave this body, we'll have very little, if nothing, to look back on, but to be thankful that we had the opportunity and just sad that we weren't able to sacrifice more. So this is why this is the most complex time in my life, with all these kind of diseases and where we're just moments or weeks from death. But I'm stubborn, so don't be surprised if I'm around even another month or two. There's things, a few more things I'd like to, even though I've told you, see that I'm gone, there's a few more things that the soul wants to do with his body, even though the personality basically it will be gone. Because after I meet with the board here and one or two other things, then most of my, well, all of my meditation on any administration, material arrangements is gone. And I'm just going to allow myself, with Krishna's mercy, into more and more into trying to nourish my inner self, so that it will be even easier when I break down the last parts of the breakdown of this body, and that I can just say I'm ready, and I'll be just taken out. So I'm just so happy that I could have lived this kind of life, and be able to have this kind of death, that I can have so much heart-to-heart connection with my God brothers and God sisters and with my disciples, and be able to cry out more to my spiritual master like never before, and to pray that I don't disappoint him as I go to, you know, one complexity after another. So with all your prayers, then hopefully I will be able to maintain equilibrium in this endeavor. So questions you have based on what they read, or something I read, or what we were saying about Jiva Goswami or Vishnu Chakravarti, then the sun will even go down more. But Saddam is still going to be waiting for you. And just as we were just talking about how when you don't have, you appreciate even more. So when you are very hungry, you appreciate the prasadam, the food stuff, even that much more. Okay? So I'm just going to slide away in the woods here. And we want to take full advantage of your association. So you and Seish can take questions. So just give me 30 seconds while you're thinking of your questions for me to exit. And then I won't be interfering. And then you can go ahead.